Welcome to Plodcast. Discover, experience and connect to the people and work of the Metropolitan Police Service in Kingston, Merton, Richmond and Wandsworth.
Hi Dan, how are you?
That was a lot of H's going on then.
How are you?
I'm good.
I'm glad that you are sounding better than the last one, because you were feeling a little bit sorry for yourself and you didn't sound very good after all your Whitney singing.
Yeah, although I was singing Whitney, I was channeling vocally Barry White by the end of it.
Yes, you didn't sound too good, but thanks for explaining to our guests.
I'm back, back in business.
Wonderful. So what have you... I'm very badly prepared and I haven't got anything on my list.
Nothing on your list. I've only got a few items on my list. I know you're going to talk about one of them, which I know gave you endless amounts of laughter.
You didn't want to mention it in your last one, so there was something to do with teeth that you didn't want to mention.
Well, yeah, tooth to be precise.
Let's tell the guests what you didn't want to talk about last podcast.
Well, I fell up the stairs, up the stairs, while carrying... I had a cup of coffee in one hand and I had... I think it was a plate with a cake on it in the other. And I thought, I'll go up to my... I've got a little office in my house upstairs. I thought I'd go from the kitchen downstairs up and I'll have a nice morning just, you know, just relaxing. And the new house that I've recently bought was all freshly painted. So I'm very careful about spilling things and, you know, not scuffing things. So as I went up the stairs, I lost my footing. But instead of trying to regain my footing, I was more worried about the coffee spilling onto the white walls that I have.
And beige carpet?
Yeah, kind of. And in an effort to save these walls, I sort of held both arms aloft to protect these walls, but of course did nothing to prevent myself falling flat onto my face on one of the stairs. And in the process, one of my front teeth coming out, which is a... what is that thing that I had?
Veneer?
Not veneer. What was it that I had years ago? It's the one where they put the metal posts in. What's the word?
I thought that was a veneer. A cap?
No, it's not a cap. It's the thing where they put the titanium post in the bone. And then they... You have to wait 3 months. Remember when I had that about 10 years ago?
No. I didn't know you had these.
It's clearly gone from my head, whatever the word is.
Because I didn't know you had these. So when you told me, when you sent me a picture of you not having your front tooth.
Mm-hmm. You thought it was Photoshopped, didn't you?
I first of all thought you'd Photoshopped it, because there was nothing else wrong with the rest of your face. No. Normally I thought there'd be a cut lip or something like that. I was in absolute hysterics and I had to stop driving my van so that I could properly laugh. And that's when you then told me that you had we'll find out what the name is in a minute, but a veneer, and that's what happened. So having a small impact to your mouth or...
Implants. Yeah.
So having a small impact then made it come out, and I didn't even know it was an implant.
It just came clean out. It landed, it was like a Tom and Jerry sort of situation. It sort of slowly bounced down the stairs, landing on the bottom stairs. But I've still got white walls. I didn't have a tooth.
What about the coffee, though? The coffee on the carpet?
On the carpet, which wasn't a problem. Coffee was the same colour as the carpet. but it was the walls that I was worried about. And then I had this sort of couple of seconds where I thought, oh, my God, this is going to cost me so much more money to get sorted out.
And you've just moved as well, so you're probably not even registered with a dentist, are you?
No, not at all. So I had to find an emergency dentist, and they're not easy. they're not easy to find, and they're not cheap either. So, yeah, it's all been reattached. And
I suppose it was lucky we had masks on, because, I mean, normally you wouldn't have been able to have gone out. But, I mean, when I spoke to you on the phone, I could hear it very slightly.
There was like...
Yeah, but yeah. You could easily have just put your mask on no one would have batted an eyelid. But you were, last year or 2 years ago, you would have looked a little bit silly with a mask on.
Yeah.
So.
So, my dentist was... really understanding, really understanding. Oh. So,
well, that's good.
So that was it, really. So yeah, I'm going to tick that off my list. Energy companies going bust.
I know.
I'm a victim of that.
Oh, are you? Yeah. Who was you with?
Well, I did that price comparison thing, and I went with one that claimed to be, you know, the best in the business. Turned out they were not. Avro, have you heard of them?
I haven't, no.
I've not really heard of them. So anyway, I signed everything over to them, just got myself up and running.
Well, that would have been recently as well, wouldn't it? Because you haven't been there that long.
And then that was it.
Oh, no. So who have you gone to now?
Well, you don't get a choice. Yeah. You get the government appoint a energy company to take over. So Octopus Energy.
Yeah, they seem to be doing a lot of the takeovers.
They've probably got the contract to do that, but... But you don't hear nothing from them. So although I still pay my direct debit each month.
You don't hear nothing from them?
No, I haven't heard nothing. I've contacted
them. As you always pick up on me, would it not be you don't hear anything from them?
What did I say?
You can't hear nothing from them.
That's spending too much time with you, that is. I blame you for that.
Because nothing, you can't hear nothing.
Yes, I know.
It's not like me to pick up on your mistakes, is it, Dan?
And you won't edit that out either, will you?
Absolutely not, no.
On a brighter note, I'll take that off my list. Last on my list is a certain Swedish supergroup.
Yes.
Yes.
Their new album release.
Well, I know Your Other Half was... Still is.
It still is, yeah. Probably not as much as 40 years ago.
Back in the,
Well, it would be 20 years ago. She was an absolutely massive fan.
Mm.
But now we're finding all her old records. She used to get coloured vinyls imported from Japan. So she's got a big collection. But, our stuff came this week.
Didn't you sell some soap, ABBA soap?
Yeah, she has ABBA soap. She's got ABBA scarf.
Who did it smell of? Like Agneta or...
No, it was just it's old now, so it didn't smell that great.
Like lavender.
I think, what's the old soap that used to have the magnet in the top that you used to be able to put on things with the red label? I can't think what that name was.
God. Imperial Leather?
Yes, I think it was. Yeah. So I think it was probably just a normal sort of bland soap smell. That
the smells of Gothenburg or Stockholm or something.
Yeah, and... she sold one of those on eBay, but that came with Agnes.
How much did that go for?
I think £75, but it had Agnes's perfume in it as well. So it was a box set.
So you got some rotten old perfume, some rotten old...
There was no perfume in it. Julie sprayed it all because she wanted to smell like Agneta.
Back in the...
I don't know if she ever did.
I bet there's still... She still smells it. It was that strong. So someone paid for an empty bottle, essentially.
Yeah, because they're very rare. You don't actually get the bottles. So it was an extremely rare box set to have the perfume bottle and the box that was in immaculate condition with the soap. They did some weird souvenirs back in the day. She's selling a calendar at the moment from Germany, but it's one of the traditional calendars where you can, each month can be any year. So it's not for that year.
Mm-hmm.
And then you just move the magnet across. She's selling that. It's about 50 odd quid on eBay. People are absolute mad ABBA fans.
I've listened to the album and it's... exactly what you think it's going to be.
Well, a few people were disappointed in the album. I am two minds. I think they've done it gracefully because they are older, so a lot of the songs reflect them being older. But I do miss the pop of the ABBA and the disco of them.
But we're not in a disco era, are we?
No, I know, but I think that's, you know, I grew up.
There's still some of that there. I can hear it. It's probably not as obvious.
Mm.
You know, you haven't got those sort of all those like 70s drum patterns and stuff like that.
No, there's a lot of bagpipes in there. Two of their songs do sound a lot like bagpipes.
Bagpipes. There is a song in there that, to me, sounds like an Irish sort of song, like some sort of jig. sort of thing.
Yeah, I've just very strange. I think it was number 10, I think it was, did have a bagpipes. And
number 10, not that I've listened to this album a few times, but number 10 is the last, there's only 10 tracks on
there. There is, yeah.
That's an instrumental track you're talking about, isn't it?
Yes, yeah. I think so.
Yeah, okay. No, it's very easy. It's really inoffensive. It's nice to listen to. And there's a few of the typical breakup songs.
Well, yeah, because a lot of their songs are all based on their life experiences. And a lot of songs used to be like that, didn't they? They used to have.
They were married and divorced.
So, and then obviously they put their separation out on having Agnetha singing a song about the breakup, which I think was very, very clever. But I don't think people are used to having those songs and stories now, as ABBA seem to write them. And it's been great, but I'm in two minds. I'm going to need to have to listen to it again and reflect on it again.
Don't, now that you've sort of got the expectation sort of off, you know the sound of it. You know, you can sort of really sort of digest
and
it.
Try and enjoy it a little bit more. So,
good, good, good. That's it. List done. Tick, tick, tick.
Done. Well, we have got a couple of officers coming in. I'm not going to tell you much about them. I'll let them come in and do the introductions themselves.
Mm-hmm.
As you don't know who I've got today.
I've got an idea, but...
We'll bring them in, and after this short break, we'll hear from them.
I'm laughing already. I don't know why.
I know. I think this is going to be a good one, Dan. So,
do you think so?
Yes. Yep. Welcome our guests. Hello, hello, hello.
Hi. Hello, hello, hello. Now you have to start hello, 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 because that's what we do with the podcast.
It's written in law.
It is.
It really is.
I've changed the law for it to be hello, hello, hello. I didn't actually explain to our listeners who they were going to be listening to. So can you introduce yourselves and tell us where you work, please?
Yes, my name is Kate Lewis, and I work in the Southwest Welfare Support Team.
And I'm Laura Raymond, and I also work with Kate in the Welfare Support Team.
Okay, so we'll come on to what the Welfare Support Team is, Dan, as well, and explain that to our guests. But should we go straight into our quiz? Because I know that these ladies are ready for this quiz.
Terrified, but
They've seen the leaderboard.
Who's at the top now?
This is the leaderboard.
Okay. It's a great competition.
A yellow piece of paper that's been held up.
Dan, you've got a leaderboard. Times are hard. I haven't made a proper one yet. Leaderboard. Liz and Amanda on 10. Damo and Trish on 11. But this is because Dan gave them a bonus point, a bonus question.
I'm very generous.
Pushed them to the top. So we'll see how you go. Right, I have the questions. Can I have 60 seconds on the clock, please, Dan?
On the clock.
Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
What does SIO stand for?
Senior Investigating Officer.
Good. What does ETA stand for?
Estimated Time of Arrival.
Good. Who was present for our first podcast?
Liz Chappell and Amanda Winnie. Oh, your actual first one was just the two of you.
Oh, well done.
Bonus point.
Yes, well done. It was Dan and CJ for the first one. What does CAD stand for?
It's Computer Aided Dispatch.
Oh, I should have known. What is the NDM?
National Decision Making Model.
Well done.
Thank you.
Good. In case papers, what does MG stand for?
As in MG11.
Oh, no, I don't know. Pass. Quick.
Pass.
Next one.
Oh, sorry. Well, the 2022 Winter Olympics will be held in what city? Winter Olympics.
Is that police related or is it in London?
It's not in London, definitely not.
Pass.
Okay. Where did the commissioner study? What university?
Oxford.
Well done.
Yes.
Exactly. And what was her first area to policing?
Ooh, I'm going to go Lambeth.
Oh, close. West End.
Oh, check for time. Well...
That was a good minute.
A good minute and a half.
That was a damn minute.
We have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Six. I think we at least need
a bonus point for knowing the Dan and CJ, because that was a trick question.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It shows you've listened to the previous one. So 6, I'll give you 7.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And
I will actually give 3 bonus points if you can tell me what did the commissioner study at Oxford.
Criminology.
You say criminology. She studied agriculture and forest sciences.
Of course she did.
There you go.
Well done, Mum.
Exactly. If you're listening, well done, Mum. That agricultural study is very useful.
And forest sciences.
Forest sciences.
Oh, yes. I do feel our questions were slightly harder than those that you've given to previous
attendees. There's no satisfying some of those they're done.
And I will be listening to the next podcast to make sure that they get equally as difficult questions.
Okay. Well, well done, Laura. There is a complaints procedure. You can
exactly.
We'll send you the address.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. It's called www.tellsomethatcares.com.
That's one of my big bugbears. You know, on the phone when people read out web addresses.
www.
Yes, it's been around for like 25 years. You can just say what it is.
That is a pet hate of yours, isn't it? You ask me for the website, I'm like, no, we don't need the www.
Just tell me what it is. I can handle that.
Okay, so I'll put you on the leaderboard.
I'm actually a bit embarrassed to be on the leaderboard.
Yeah. So 7. Yeah. Shall I have to get you back for another one, shall we?
Yes, that's
a Champion of Champions, we'll do that.
Does MG stand for?
Ah, I can tell you.
Go on, tell us.
Manual of Guidance.
Mm-hmm. Which I couldn't remember either. I mean, if we put that question out to the whole BCU, I guarantee 5% will know that.
It's from the CPS. There you
go. Well, you learn a new thing every day.
You do. Every day is a school day.
Speaking of school days,
yep.
I think it's time for a bit of education.
By you?
No, from our guests.
Okay, good idea, Dan. So they've said they're from the welfare support team. Would you like to explain what the welfare support team is and what they do?
So we started in June 2020, and the idea of it was that we would support all our South West staff. We've got 1,600 staff on South West. The idea was COVID had hit and a lot of members of staff were working from home. And they weren't able to come into work for whatever reason. And it was so that we could be there, someone to talk to or to keep them connected to the workplace, basically. We quite quickly started taking on lots more responsibility. And we now say, when people say to us, what do? We do anything to do with welfare or well-being for our staff. So anyone can come to us and ask us anything. And if we can't help them, we'll signpost them.
Where are you based?
So we're based at Kingston Police Station.
Mm-hmm.
However, we travel the whole BCU. So we go to all the stations and we have drop-in sessions every week so that if there's any members of staff that want to come and speak to us, they can come and find us at one of the stations they're at.
You've mentioned we. Who is the we?
Myself as acting sergeant, Laura, who's a police constable, and Mike, who's a police constable.
And you're all permanent staff or you do it part-time alongside another role?
We are full-time in the welfare team.
So I know that you guys are really busy and you have lots of work coming your way. For someone that doesn't know anything about your area of business, what you'd be expected to give advice on, what are the main areas that you actually deal with?
Basically looking after all our staff, either on long-term sick, someone who might be on short-term sick that just needs some assistance or some signposting. We look after people that are on maternity leave or parental leave. We look after staff that have been assaulted. We call that Operation Hampshire. And Laura will probably talk to you a bit more about that later. We have a South West Cancer Support Group that's just starting up. We have our South West Menopause Support Group. We have South West Bobby Tots, which we started up. And that's basically looking after those that are on maternity or paternity leave, parental leave, sorry. And we get together with them and babies and have like a keep in touch session, basically.
Oh, okay.
We do that once every 8 weeks and it's a chance for us to see them, for them to feel like they're still connected to work, and we get to meet the babies.
Because normally they'd be off and you wouldn't see them for sort of 9 months, would you? And then they have to return. So you're trying to keep that contact there.
Okay. Absolutely.
So what generates most of your work, your requests? What's the bulk of your sort of day-to-day business?
It will probably come from line manager referrals. We don't contact anybody unless they're happy for us to be they're happy to be contacted by us.
So normally a sergeant will drop you an email?
Yes, potentially, or you yourself might drop us an email and say, I just need some help with...
So you can self-refer?
Absolutely. Almost, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, and if it's via the supervisor route, they would drop you an email to say, my member of staff has got this issue, can you... What do you do thereafter?
So as long as they confirm that they're happy for us to make contact with them, we will then either email them and say, let us know if you want us to meet up with you, or we'll give you a call. Majority of people we do meet up with, and we'll go for a coffee and we'll have a chat with them. And then depending on what their issue is, we'll help signpost them for extra help.
Okay, so when you talk about help, you're not just talking about people that you mentioned things about the council support network that you have here. Is this just emotional support as well, or is it sort of, you know, realms do you go into?
It's peer-to-peer support. So we are literally there to talk to listen, to signpost where appropriate. That might be that we speak to someone for, I don't know, one or two times. We've signposted them to what they need and they're happy. Other people we've been working with for maybe upwards of a year, where circumstances in their life mean that things are quite difficult, so we can signpost them to various different things and just be an impartial, confidential person to speak to.
Mm. When you say signposting, are we talking about national groups or that can help?
I think there's so much support available both in and out of the job, but sometimes it's really difficult, especially when you're not in a very good place. It's difficult to find the right support. The internet's not the most user-friendly, so sometimes finding what you need is difficult, whereas because this is our day-to-day bread and butter job, we've got databases, we know what's best for certain people, so hopefully we can signpost them in the right direction without them being completely overwhelmed with where to look and what to find.
So you said support. I take it you mean charities that are out there, some organisations and charities?
Charities and non-profit organisations. So there's a few that we use, mainly set up to deal with blue light services. One would be Police Care that we use quite a lot.
Yeah, big shout out to our charities that we use.
Massive shout out. They've been invaluable to staff on the South West. So there's Police Care, Call for Backup, and Rock to Recovery, which is a non-profit organisation set up to deal with veterans, military veterans. But we have also kind of tapped into their resources, and again, they've been life-changing for some of our staff.
Laura's just mentioned the external charities that we might use, some of the external, there are loads, but we do encourage our staff to ring our Employers Assisted Programme, which is a 24/7 number, and there's a counsellor at the end of the phone, basically. So we do try to encourage staff members to do that. Sometimes they don't want work to know, and that's when we might encourage them to then use the external charities.
Okay.
So as isn't, there'll be no record.
Oh, okay. So some people just want to talk through what they've been through and find out if what they're thinking is normal, or is that right? Is that what will happen? Whatever sounds.
Yes. So that might bring us nicely onto another side of our role, our trauma risk management, which is after our staff have been to a trauma call, which could be... What we try to say is something that you might find traumatic, Dan wouldn't find...
Sorry, a trauma call?
Yeah.
Would you want to explain what a trauma call is? Give you a chance.
Is that what they're called?
Potentially traumatic event.
Okay. So what I was going to explain is that you might find a road traffic accident where someone's been run over and needs CPR, very traumatic.
Mm-hmm.
Dan might go and he doesn't find it as traumatic, but it's normalising your particular response to that call.
Okay.
Because we all think differently and we all have different experiences in life. My example of that would be when I went to a road traffic accident and gave CPR to an elderly gentleman, and all I could see was my dad lying there. So for me, it was really traumatic. But for my officer that I was with, my crewmate, they didn't find it traumatic at all. And I overthought that for weeks. And it's just making sure that we let the staff members know that it's absolutely okay to feel like that. It's not, that is normal behaviour. It's normal to overthink it. It's normal to not be able to sleep. It's normal to not be able to eat after a traumatic incident. However, what's not normal is if that's still carrying on sort of 6 weeks down the line if you're still having the same effects. In our service, we've dealt with traumatic incidents, as we all do, and never had any sort of debrief after, and taken that on and then maybe gone on to another call and then gone on to another call and then maybe gone to another traumatic call. And then you take that home and you do overthink it. And, you know, for some officers, that then comes out in post-traumatic stress. And so now, moving forward, we're trying to stop that for our officers by supporting them. And it's a peer-to-peer support. So if we identify that there's been a traumatic incident, we invite the officers to come and have a peer-to-peer meeting with us. And there's a team of 15 of us on the BCU. And it looks like about an hour and a half of their time, 72 hours after the incident, we get them to talk about what has happened and how they've been feeling and normalising it and making sure that they're okay. And then we see them again 6 weeks later and make sure that they're still okay. And if they're not okay, that's when we would be signposting them to get help.
So is there a baseline? Because you say traumatic incident, is there a baseline? So whenever CPR is involved, then that is always classed as a traumatic incident. Because you've mentioned an RTC, which is, for our listeners, is a road traffic collision. What, just say it was an, I say ordinary, it's nothing's really ordinary, is it? So if there was no CPR involved, that wouldn't be classed as one. But if there is CPR, then it gets classed as a traumatic one.
Yeah, I think what you're trying to say is, are there any triggers that will automatically make somebody in line for, you know, receiving that sort of assistance, help?
I think for us, every day, we go through the calls that have come in that may be seen to be traumatic, and then we invite the officers to come and speak with us. Or their line manager may have referred them and said they've been to this call. It doesn't necessarily matter if they've been to one that has been involving CPR or not.
So when you're looking for this list, are there certain situations or ages or sort of vulnerabilities that you look for, things that always are going to sort of jump out of the page?
Unfortunately, sudden infant deaths will definitely generate us getting in touch with the staff members to see if they want to talk it through.
Mm-hmm. And any death? Or just infant deaths?
It can possibly be involving any death, because, like we said before, if you went to a sudden death and you were perhaps suffering a bereavement at home, mm-hmm. that for you might be traumatic. So yeah. That might not automatically flag to our attention when we're looking through the calls. But if the officer felt that they needed to talk to someone, or the line manager knew that they'd suffered a bereavement at home and thought, oh, they might have struggled a bit with that, then they can refer in for that. It can be for anything at all.
Are we the only BCU that offers, or is this something that's been replicated throughout the Met?
A few other BCUs also do the trauma risk management.
People call that TRIM, don't they, for short?
They do call it TRIM. We are hoping that the Met will bring something in so that every area has the same sort of response. But just picking up on that question as well, we were the first welfare support team in the Met, and now there are 7 or 8 other areas that have also started their own teams too. So everyone is seeing the importance of our team.
So you said this happened in 2020. Was it something that was going to happen anyway, or did it only get put in place because people were told they have to work from home because of lockdown?
It was in the pipeline before COVID hit. I'll have to give her a shout out. Our Chief Inspector, Andy Gentry, wanted to start the welfare team. And I think COVID brought it about quicker than probably we anticipated, due to people having to work from home. So those that couldn't come in and had to isolate were then disconnected from work. So we started making contact with them, and we had virtual sessions where twice a week we'd have like a coffee catch-up session for people to come online and have a Teams chat with us. And we also organised chats with people. So had someone from the Alzheimer's Society come give a chat. We had Shirley Kennett do a life coach session with us. Someone from Shine, someone from Cruise. So lots of different people came in and gave chats online on our Teams, virtual sessions.
How well received were the virtual sessions?
I would say they were very well received. We had 15 to 20 people turn up every week. And for some people that were not in the office, it was their weekly thing to come along, and we'd have a chat and talk about what had been going on the telly or work, or so they just felt connected. So I definitely would say it was received well.
I don't think it was just the connection to the workplace. Sometimes some of these people lived at home alone. They had no other support, so they were missing the kind of team dynamic that they'd have in the office, and then they were at home all on their own. So it was just keeping in touch in general. Mm. I think we had to remember that everyone's an individual, and that's how we kind of base everything we do.
Well, I think everyone's personal circumstances are different, aren't they? And that it wasn't a case of gradually people went home and started to work from home. It was, you know, Friday, have a good weekend, see you Monday. And then all of a sudden, Monday it was lockdown, you can't go in. So I think it made a big difference to people being able to speak to them online, because you miss that banter coming into the office. Everyone moans about being on the train and coming in and having to do work. But actually having that banter, people missed it, didn't they?
It's what we thrive off in this job, isn't it? The dark humour and the banter.
Yeah.
Well, they definitely got banter at our virtual sessions.
Well, that's good. We need that sometimes.
You spoke about Operation Hampshire. Tell us a little bit more about that.
So Operation Hampshire is the processes that are put into place when an officer has been assaulted in the course of their duty. So I set up a pilot at the end of last year. I was asked to by one of the chief inspectors around reflective learning as to how the incident went and what could be done differently. The term reflective learning, I like to think of it more as organisational learning, because it encompasses anything that could be done better. So that could be that the officer says, oh, well, I didn't think that the officer safety training we had is up to scratch. And we would feed that back into the learning and development as to how we can improve things. It might also be that a piece of equipment failed, so we would encourage them to put near miss forms on. And as well as all that, obviously, primarily is to look after their welfare. So we would make sure that they've got everything they needed. This is done by many different layers. It's not just us. The SLT will often call staff once they've been assaulted and check how they are. They're obviously looked after by their line management straight away, make sure they can get home. And we would be the follow-up, similar to a TRIM, the trauma risk assessment. So we would check in with them, check that they've got everything they need, check they're okay, see if they need signposting, see if they need a TRIM assessment, and make sure that all of those bits to make things better are encompassed and done.
And you've said assault. It's not just assault, though, is it? It's like verbal. It can be verbally assaulted, not just a physical assault.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Because I think sometimes we forget that actually being called hurtful names can either be impactful at the time or can bring back memories.
Things have changed massively over the last however many years. If you were assaulted on duty previously, it would kind of be don't let that happen again by your line manager, and that would be that. I know that's personally what happened to me. Whereas now we are more focused on looking after staff and making sure that people are prosecuted for assaulting emergency workers. There's a new emphasis, like you said, there's new emphasis on assaulting an emergency worker. So it's making sure that all the right processes are put in place to support staff.
Well, that's good to know. Very good to know the support is there.
I've heard about Met Families. Can you talk me through that? What's all that about?
Met Families came in 2019. There was a gap where people were going on maternity leave or parental leave, needing time off for fertility treatment, needing career breaks. It encompasses a lot of different things. And they put it all together, basically, and called it Met Families. So we have 9 Met Family advocates on South West. And the idea is that someone becomes pregnant, or we know of someone who needs to go on parental leave, and we can signpost them to that advocate and they can look after them from the start until they're off, and however long that might be if they then take a career break. And that's basically Met Families.
And they maintain the contact while they're off. Is that what happens as well?
Yes, if that's what the person wants. I mean, some people like to go off and just be off. I can speak from experience for myself, and I think Laura is the same. When we were on maternity leave, we didn't hear anything from work at all.
But did you want to?
Yes.
I did, absolutely.
Yes. Okay, so a lot of this stuff that you're doing now is because the way you were treated wasn't very good, and you have tried to improve that massively.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. And therefore you leave it up to them and say, right, you're going off, I understand that, but do you want contact or do you want nothing?
Yes.
Well, it's alienating, isn't it? Because if you take any amount of time off work, a couple of weeks, or in case of maternity, months, you can come back to a team that you hardly recognise, because the turnover of people, new people have gone, whatever. but also laws have changed, policies have changed, buildings have changed, you're locked out of your computer, you know, you might have a supervisor that you've never met before. So to have all that, plus the doubts of those personal doubts that you might have, am I still up to doing this sort of job, you know?
I think that's what happened to both of us. When I was off, my job role was disbanded. Everyone that was in my team got moved up to MetCC. My line manager changed 3 times. I didn't know who they were. So coming back and wanting to start a part-time rota, trying to find the right person to talk to and work out how I did it and what I could do was an absolute minefield. And
my experience was horrendous. I remember wanting to come back, and at the time I wanted to come back part-time to work around my partner shifts, and the line manager at the time didn't want a part-time officer on their team. We are going back 13 years here. And I had to go and find a new job. How do you do that when you're at home and you haven't got the connections? So we are now your connection, and we have Keep in Touch days, as I mentioned to you, with Bobby Tots. And we have a Facebook page for our Southwest Bobby Tots as well. So anyone that's off can come on there and ask questions, and we try to keep them up to date. Every week we send out the BCU bulletin. We send them any jobs that are being advertised, any information that we think they need to know of things that are changing on the BCU.
So even though they're out of it, they're still in it. They're not so disconnected from the police world. Because that is what's happened, you know, out of sight, out of mind, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Like you said, you two went on your maternity leave, out of sight, out of mind, and then everything just collapsed around you. And then there's always that anxiety about coming back to work, isn't there?
Absolutely.
Is it the right decision?
You don't want to come back to work and leave your precious little newborn, or, you know, however long you have off, your baby, your world at home. But we all want to get back to the workplace. But finding
we do miss the banter, though, don't we? You need to get back for that.
We do, yeah. Finding where you fit now, when your whole dynamic and your perspective and everything in your life has changed, we hope that we can ease that transition.
Well, especially because I think in a way you're a completely different person. Your whole life changes because you are a pregnant woman, and then when you come back to work, you're a mother.
Yeah.
And that's probably a big, I mean, I'm not a mother, so I don't know, but I can imagine that's a big change, because you've gone from just really caring for yourself and maybe your other half to now actually there's someone that adores you, unconditional love, and that they're now your world. So it's a different
It's really hard. And you want to come back to the team that you were on at the time. I was on response team, so I wanted to come back to my team. And like you said, Dan, it's changed. There's different people. I had a different line manager, I had a new governor. And it's not knowing who to speak to. Who do I go to say these are the shifts that I need to do around my husband, who's also in the police, and trying to sort all that out. We can do that. And we also work closely with our Project Balance, who are dealing with flexible shift patterns and
part-time rota, job sharing.
That's the word I was looking for. Thank you. So things are changing for the better. And I know from feedback from the people that have been on parental leave who have had parental leave before we came into place, they have said it was so much better this time. They were able to, some people didn't want to bother their line manager with a question that's quite small. They can email us and we can find out the answer for them, or send them in the right direction.
Well, that's really interesting, isn't it, that you've actually heard from people that were on it before and didn't have support to what it is now. And that's probably quite rewarding for you too, isn't it, knowing that you've actually made a real difference to the organisation and to someone's life, and that they've still got the connection there. So that's really good.
In many ways we're doing what the corporate world have been doing for some time, and of course they've got the resources to do that. You know, historically, you know, we don't. So for these teams, your team, to now exist and to provide not only a couple of services which would be a lifeline, but to offer something that's completely comprehensive, when no matter what stage you are at your career, what your job title is, what your responsibilities are at work, what your family situation is, what your personal circumstances are, there's probably something you can do to make their life just that little bit easier. And that's going to make a massive difference, isn't it?
And I think officers often don't know what they can and can't do. So one of our recent kit days, there was someone who came in saying, oh, I'm sure that I'm going to have to take a career break. My husband's in the job. We've got, you know, a number of small children at home. I don't know how I'm going to do this. And it was one of our kit days where there was one of the superintendents was there, and he said, look, we can make this work. We can put things in place. Just let me know what you can do and we'll sort it. And we do have a very flexible, forward-thinking SLT, I think, on the Southwest, and we are lucky that they are incredibly supportive of welfare.
That's key, isn't it? Because you can have all your ambitions for these types of teams, and you can put into place all sorts of services and referral schemes and, you know, pretty much everything. But if that is not being supported and, you know, rubber stamped by, you know, the people that make policy decisions, then it's going nowhere quicker, isn't it?
Mm.
Okay, so what you just mentioned, kit. What's a kit day?
So a kit day is a keep in touch day. So when officers are on maternity leave, they're entitled to a number of days where they can come into the workplace and do things such as officer safety training, keep up with the NCOUTS, which is the online training that we do, or come to the keep in touch events that we run to get them prepared for coming back to work and keep them in touch with the workplace.
It's little things like, will my trousers still fit when I get back to work? So if you have your keep in touch day, you can come and measure up and be ready.
Order new uniform.
Get your uniform ordered.
Oh, okay. Which are useful, which you guys wouldn't have had.
No.
But, but now it's really useful for them because it is down to anxiety, isn't it? It's the not knowing what you're coming back to.
I think if I look back, I've had three children, so I've been off three times. Every time I was petrified to come back.
So it didn't ever get any easier?
Never. What got worse, I think. We've also put in place, soon to be parents, being protected for 2 weeks leading up to the date of expected delivery. So how that might look is that an officer would be protected from having to go out and possibly finish late or not be around where he or she works. And therefore, if they got that call, they were able to get home quickly, basically. Because we have some of our staff, and as particularly recently, have been put on lots of aid commitments up in London.
Mm-hmm.
You might end up going up there and being up there for a good few hours. You don't want that call and then not to be able to get there. So we've tried to do it so that we're protecting our staff.
So I suppose that links in again with the anxiety of coming into work and knowing that your other half is at home and could drop any moment. It stops that worry for, oh, I could be uptown and I can't get back and I'm going to miss the birth.
Absolutely.
And also for the person or the woman at home who's pregnant, knowing that their partner is only a phone call and a short distance away, which makes a big difference for the pregnancy, I'm sure.
Yeah, it offers definitely reassurance, isn't it?
Oh, that's really interesting. So you guys have done a lot for this PCU with all the support that you're giving anyone. How do you have any time for yourselves? Who looks after you?
So our senior managers look after us. They're constantly checking in on us and making sure we're okay. They have tried to refer us to speak to professionals if we've needed to. We haven't taken them up on that offer. We look after each other. Mm-hmm. We have a monthly day where we debrief and make sure that everyone's doing okay. I would like to say we're all approachable to each other if there's any issues.
And I think we all know one another very well. We know if someone's having a bad day and, you know, we kind of take the pressure off one another.
Because obviously you are indirectly taking on this trauma, aren't you? Because, yes, you weren't there at that call that someone has witnessed, but you then have to sit there and listen and even watch them emotionally reenact that call. It must affect you guys as well.
I think it's something we're very aware of, secondary trauma and the potential that we might start to suffer with that.
Mm.
But I think Kate and I are both very passionate about what we do, and we do just want to help, and seeing that we can help people and the difference that we can make is amazing. And it's, you know, I signed up to the job 20 years ago to help people, and the fact that I can now help my colleagues is just amazing.
Well, we haven't mentioned that actually about your service, because I think you mentioned having three children, so you've been off for a while, and you mentioned 13 years. What is your length of service with the both of you? So Kate, what's your service?
I was 20 years in July.
Oh, okay. And you just mentioned 20 years as well, Laura?
Yeah, I'm just coming up to 20 years.
And so you, because you've got that experience, you can now make the changes that you know the job needs to make because you've been in here in the job a long time.
Yes, and I can't believe the changes that have come in the last couple of years and the things that we take to our senior managers and say, oh, can we try this? Could we do this? Things that sometimes they laugh at me about, but they always will take the idea and pilot it and give us a go at trying something if it means it will benefit our staff.
Wow, so we have talked about so many things that you guys do on the team. So I want to congratulate you because you do so much and you support the whole BCU, so well done.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Do you think we've forgotten anything or anything else you want to mention that we have forgotten to ask you or that you think might be useful?
I know that we touched on our menopause group. I just wanted to say that we started up recently our Southwest Menopause Group, which is a new thing that we are looking at, seeing how we can help our members of staff that are going through the menopause and what might need to be put in place to help them better at work. And that's definitely something I wanted mentioned. The fact that we don't take over from the line manager's responsibilities, it's still their responsibility to ultimately look after their member of staff. We just help on a peer-to-peer.
You're that safety net, really, aren't you?
Basically, that's the point of it. And also just to reiterate that we look after anybody on Southwest about anything. It doesn't necessarily have to be work-related. If you've got something going on at home and you want to talk to someone because you can't talk to someone at home, then come to us. We're here to help anybody.
Wow. Thank you so much for being there.
Thank you.
You do so much. And thank you for being here today.
Thanks for having us.
They've got their work cut out, haven't they?
They have. I cannot believe the long list of things that they have to do and the groups that they're part of and everything that they have to try and keep on top of, as well as look after themselves as well.
Well, the thing is, you know, we as an organisation, you know, we're encouraging people to come forward with issues that can affect them, certainly the work they do. And it's telling that these guys are busy. These guys are, you know, constantly being approached and people asking questions about, you know, how can they assist people with their problems. So it just goes to show you that that problem probably has always been there, and yet it was never really catered for. You know, we've both got, you know, a fear few years in the job, and it was fend for yourself, wasn't it, before?
Well, yeah, and I think the reason it is what it is now and why it is succeeding is because of the bad experiences that they have been through before, that they have learnt from them, and they don't want others to go through that. So therefore, they're putting all these implementations in.
It'd be interesting to see how that role grows. You know, I know there's only a few people there, but I can see something like that being the norm throughout the Met.
Absolutely. But without a doubt, it needs to be. And it's sad, but it's also good that so many other BCUs are doing it, but still not every BCU. So we're so lucky to have the support for the troops here, I think, and they seem to be setting the bar and it's high.
Definitely.
So it's really interesting talking to them, and they're both really, really, really nice,
really approachable,
and they both come across like that, and they actually want to care and they do want to actually listen to your problems. It isn't just a job for them. I think they take a little bit on as well about your problems.
I'm sure they do. I'm sure they do.
It's really good that they've got their own coping mechanisms for dealing with it, because they are taking on your problems as well, and they want to. They're here to help others, which is really nice to see. And even though they're not actually out on the streets being the front line, they're still helping the frontline troops, which makes a real difference.
Yes, that extra line of defence that people have, isn't it? Yeah.
Definitely really good.
Good. Long may continue.
Let's hope so.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so have you... I didn't have anything on my list. Is everything crossed off on yours?
All done. Every grievance is off my chest.
Well, that is good.
I can rest easy tonight.
Good to hear. And I'm glad that you weren't singing last night to not have your...
I'm in fine throttle.
To not have your...
vocal cords.
Yes.
They were damaged. They were damaged.
In that case then, this is the podcast on the Southwest BCU by Dan and CJ.
Until next time.
Goodbye.
Bye.